Hello to all my listeners. My name is Emily McSweeney. Today I will be interviewing my mom about organ donations and bioethics that go along with that process. So, hello, Mother. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Hello, Emily. My name is Annette O'Gorman. I'm an occupational therapist. I work at UCSF Medical Center, and I work with many patients who have organ transplants, be they heart, lung transplant, kidney, liver transplants, and also patients with who've had stem cell transplants.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So I'm sure you've kind of experienced a lot of difficulties and evolved, but at the same time, you've seen many great things that have come out of organ donations. So what have you noticed are some benefits?
Yes, indeed. So having for many patients with a chronic disease, having an organ transplant is a literally a new lease of life. It allows patients to return home and return to their families, return to the roles or jobs they were able to do previously. And it is a miracle of of medical advances and of the times that we live in.
Wow. So organ donations seem to be pretty great. But I'm sure there's also many bioethical decisions that doctors have to make about organ donations and specifically who gets them and who's a good candidate. So what are some ways that doctors kind of decide who's the best candidate?
Yes, indeed. There are many factors that go into that. Organ transplants require lifetime follow-up in terms of taking medication and choosing to live a healthy lifestyle. And so it is quite a big decision to undertake. However, there may be some challenges for patients who don't have supportive family, who maybe are on their own, who may not be able to afford the cost of the expensive lifelong medications. And for those who choosing a healthy lifestyle that does not involve substance use is a challenge. So sometimes on those grounds, patients do not qualify for transplants. However, that is a decision that a patient will make along with their doctor.
So you kind of said that kind of choosing a candidate that can kind of that can afford the medication in the future. So if someone is wealthier, does that make them a better candidate?
It doesn't make them necessarily a better candidate. It just makes it generally their life is easier in terms of being able to afford the medications. For somebody who doesn't have a lot of money to buy the medications, there's some extra reliance or some dependence upon family members to be able to support them in their supporting the cost of these medications. There are also some health insurance options that may be explored, but this often tends to be a constant battle that patients have to fight with insurance companies to cover medications.
Yeah, so kind of, I think that's really interesting, kind of both the negative and positive parts of organ donation, but what did kind of actually get me interested in this was the future was in class. We read two books, one called Being Human by Leon Cass, and the other was Never Let Me Go by Kazuo Ishiguro. So when, in the story of Being Human, this woman, whose husband had unfortunately got fatally shot, and he was an organ donor. And so once he died, his heart, his lungs, his skin, and his corneas were actually given away to other people. But at the funeral, the wife was obviously grieving the loss. And actually a lady there came up to her and said, "Well, more than 50% of your husband's body is still alive in someone else's body. So technically your husband isn't really technically your husband's still alive. And so I don't really know if that's like really true.
I guess in the literal sense, possibly not, but maybe for many family members who have lost a loved one through an accident and have had the opportunity to donate organs to somebody else, there is a sort of comfort in knowing that while their loss was tragic, there was a benefit to another person in being a heart or lung or even corneal transplants.
So continue on with the story that I read. This woman did actually feel very connected to the body parts that were donated. So she tried to track down each of the people. She did meet the man that had the lungs, but she couldn't really relate to them. She didn't really feel like her husband was there. But she knew that if she found the person that had the heart, that she would be able to remember her husband and just reassure her of kind of like his presence is there with her, except for it's in another person's body, obviously. And so in hospitals and kind of in real life, how do people connect, like do people tend to connect with the their loved one, like do they connect with the person that their loved one gave the organs to? Or how does that kind of work?
That is always an option for the donor's families. So some people would choose not to have any further contact, but some people might decide to maintain contact. Typically, the receiver of the organ often does like to reach out to find out who they're more about who their donor is, since they're carrying that organ in their body. But the choice is rests with individuals. But there have been many benefits, and I've seen some benefits of families who stayed in touch with between the donor and the patient who received the organ. And it can be a very meaningful relationship, and often helps families to deal with the grieving process of losing a loved one.
So, how hard is it actually to get an organ? Is the waiting list long or?
Yes, so there are waiting lists. There is generally more demand for organs than there are organs available. There is typically organ donation lists that doctors have to put together and in the case of a liver, for example, there's the list depending on how sick an individual is and how great their need for the transplant is, maintains being higher on the list. However, if they get overly sick, they may no longer qualify for that liver, and then somebody else moves up higher on the list. And so along with that, there is some debate and some interest in the idea of xenotransplantation, which is to do with transplanting the organs of animals into humans. Needless to say, there was some controversy around that. Just many people, this will go against their religious beliefs, or even just the very idea of having an organ from an animal in their body would be difficult to deal with.
Are there any other options for specifically maybe even like stem cells to kind of regrow these organs?
Yes, so stem cells is a very interesting area and a more recent advance in our in the medical technology or innovation. Again, it does have some controversy or bioethical concerns, mostly because, stem cells, which are harvested from a fetus, can be translated into any cell type for the body. So this can be is very useful type of cell to be able to harvest. So, however, when stem cells are harvested from a fetus, the fetus is then destroyed. So, needless to say, this causes a lot of controversy, and not everybody would be comfortable with that idea. However, it is possible to harvest stem cells from the umbilical cord after a baby is born. So that is a more harmless way to harvest the cells. However, the demand for stem cells is so great that the interest in harvesting them as many as possible maybe outweighs the need for harvesting them only from the umbilical cord.
Oh, so kind of what I was really interested in is the book that I read, Never Let Me Go. So the government had experienced a shortage of organs, and so their solution was actually to create clones of each of the people, and these clones were separated from the rest of society. And the people in society didn't know about these clones, but the clones' sole purpose in life was to donate organs when they were needed. And so they would give up their vital organs to help their clone, the actual person in the real life, also known as a possible, according to the book. And so this was very interesting about how they had clones that were always ready to give organs, which I think could be really cool. If you knew you had someone that would be giving you organs, but it did kind of, one topic that came up was about the clones' rights, and if there are people as well. But I think that as technology advances, we could possibly, I feel like, come closer to this, which would definitely help with the shortage of organs.
Yes, indeed, that is a very interesting idea, and I agree, it would be wonderful to know that if I needed an organ, I could just shop for one, essentially, and have
there,
one.
There'd be one available for you.
One available for me. So, however, it does. If we assume that the clones are human, then we should treat clones as humans, and that would it would be. Yeah. Inhumane to think otherwise.
So thank you for that insight, but I kind of wanted to touch more on your, what I would say is more of your specialty, with like kind of the rehabilitation and bringing the patient back into their normal daily life. And so what is kind of the process like after someone gets an organ transplant?
So for many patients, there is the surgery is complex and patients spend a lot of time in the hospital. So initially there is that period of time where they just have to learn how to walk again, how to dress themselves, how to do basic things, because they've lost so much strength, and to build up that strength so that they can be strong enough to go home. As well as that, their patients do have to take lifetime long medications to make sure that their body does not reject the new organ. They also have to be very careful around the risk of infection is increased after the transplant, so they may have to choose, or they may not be allowed to be around a pet, for example, or to work in a garden with soil.
So they
soil.
Really do have to change their
lives. Yeah, so there's a big change in their lifestyles, yeah. Yeah, they may not quite have the amount of energy that they had before transplant, or it may take a while for them to get back to where they were before their illness started.
So how long is the average rehabilitation period? I'm sure it's different for each organ transplant, but kind of on average.
It can vary so much. It could be, I would say, maybe from some younger person, maybe from a month to extending to a year or maybe beyond for somebody who is older. It is a big change in lifestyle. So, for example, a patient who had a lung transplant, the patient's brain, it takes a while to connect with the new lung. The patient's brain before transplant knew that it was difficulty, would have a lot of anxiety about breathing. So even though now they have a new lung. The brain still hasn't registered that there's a new lung, and it still feels that anxiety. And it takes therapy and time to connect the brain with the new organ again.
So I'm sure this process is really long. And do patients, like, how often, or how do patients kind of, do they, like, how often do they give up kind of on this process of rehabilitation, and how do you kind of get them back on track?
Yes, it can be very demanding, and it can sometimes feel that there are more bad days than good days. So it really, a big part of my role is to work with patients identifying what is most important to them. What are those roles that they want to get back to doing? What's most important to them? And we try to, even in the hospital, start to engage in simple activities that a patient might do. So we would start with being able to dress oneself, being able to take a shower, maybe being able to fix a simple meal. And these things might sound very simple, but patients are, it is extraordinary to watch patients participate in these kinds of things, because for the first time, they kind of get the message that they are normal again, and they feel more like who they are. And that begins the journey of doing more things and doing more of the typical activities that they would do in their usual lives.
So if a patient was really determined to follow up with the medication afterwards and the entire process, would that make them a better candidate for the organ transplant?
Yes, it would. And it would mean that the outcome of the transplant was better also. It would mean that the patient could get stronger quicker and could get back to their usual lives quicker.
So overall, do you think that being able to transplant organs is a really good advancement in society?
I think absolutely. It is wonderful to know that there are options for people who have illnesses, like types of cancers that or diseases that they inherit, and that they might otherwise would die. So it is nice to know that there are some options for alternatives to maybe living a full lifespan, or living a longer life.
Very interesting. Thank you so much for coming on my podcast today. And we'll see how kind of how science advances and the possibilities we have with organ transplants. And I think that it is endless, and there is so far to go, especially with stem cells, as you mentioned. But yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Emily. It's very nice to talk with you, and nice to hear what you have read in your literature and science class that is related to organ transplant. That's very interesting. Thank you.
I just want to say thank you to all my listeners. Have a good day.